Hi, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Back with you, but not able to take your calls yet because our phone lines are still down, as a result of which we've been mixing and patching and bringing you what I consider to be the dynamic radio shows, some from the past, some of them current. Some recent research on success has given us more questions about how we understand people to get ahead in life. Again, an example of this, a recent piece of research shows that if you're sad, you should never make a financial decision. People who make financial decisions, when they're sad, wind up making decisions 40% less accurately than when they're not sad. So there's a question for yourself. You're feeling sad? Don't go shopping. Don't go investing. Don't do things with your finances. An interesting thought. A recent article in the New York Times talks about if you're feeling low. A study in the Journal of Consumer Research, when people feel bad, their sense of touch quickens and they instinctively want to hug something or someone. They grab toys. It's a mammal thing. If a young mammal feels gloomy, it's usually because they're hurt, sick, cold, scared, or lost. So the brain rewards them with a gust of pleasure as they scamper back to their mom for a warm muzzle and a meal. So think that, no need to think that over. When you feel that way, hurt, sick, cold, scared, or lost, you do the same thing. You go for a meal or something to hug. It's part of evolution's gold standard. It's an old carrot and stick gambit, an impulse that evades reflection because it evolved to help infants thrive by telling them what to do, not in words, but in feelings, sequence of tastes, touches, smells, colors. So how to negotiate life becomes a very interesting thing. Success becomes an interesting concept. Success in romance, success in living, success in business. We have a lot of tools in our knowledge. We have a lot of things we know about. One of my favorite tools is to be in touch with people who have also traveled this planet and learned quite a few things. And I like to hear people who are special. An old associate of mine, somebody who I've been following around for a long time, Jack Canfield. You probably know Jack as the founder and co-creator of the New York Times bestseller Chicken Soup for the Soul series. What you may not know is that Jack is also the founder of the self-esteem seminars, and he's written many, many books. You've also, and with me also, is Rachel Hott in the studio, Dr. Rachel Hott. Rachel, you've known Jack a long time, haven't you?
Yeah, actually, I studied with Jack. I studied with him in 1994 and 1995 and have been teaching a lot of what he tells people in all of his self-esteem seminars.
And he's been a high school university teacher. He does workshops. He's a psychotherapist. For the last 25 years, he's been a leading authority in the area of self-esteem and personal development. Now, Jack Canfield brings us his latest work, which is called The Power of Focus, a fascinating piece of work. So today we're going to put our program on how you can learn to focus to hit your business, personal, and financial targets with more certainty. Now, that's going to be quite a thing. And believe it or not, this is just not somebody who's giving you theory. This is someone who has gone and done a number of interviews with a number of experts and has come up with his own, plus what he's learned from other very successful people, of what makes success, what you need to do.
So if you have goals that you haven't been achieving, if you have bad habits that you've been saying you need to stop, this is the kind of material that's going to really get you to the next step. If you've been hesitating, this is what's going to finally push you forward.
Well, how do you know it?
Well, the material itself.
It sounds like you're selling the book.
Well, I read the book. And
you liked it?
Yeah, and it actually has work projects for you in the book. You actually write in the book. This is one of those books.
You've been a motivator a long time, Rachel. You know, I mean, you really help people get motivated to do stuff like this. I mean,
that's
you
right.
work with them on this. So you're saying that this is this kind of work that will help people. And we hope to give it to them today, whether they buy the book or not. Let's see now. Let's introduce people to Jack Canfield. What's the biggest obstacle to success?
Well, I think the biggest obstacle to success for most people in our culture is a lack of clear priorities and a clear lack of focus, which is why we called our book The Power of Focus. And I think we are so distracted by what's going on in the culture. You know, the average American watches 6 hours of television a day, which means that 1/4 of their 24 allotted hours is spent watching TV. So by the time they're 60, they'll have spent 15 years watching television. And so we have those kind of distractions. We're pulled by our kids, by our neighbors. Someone once said to me, those who don't have clear priorities and goals will work for and be used by people who do. And so basically, if one wants to be successful, one has to focus on that success. And not only focus on what you want, but focus on developing the tools and techniques and skills and information sets that will help you get there.
Let's take that back for just a minute. You know, you said something very important. Those who do have the skill, those who don't have the skill to focus become the food for those who do have the skill.
Absolutely.
You know, I've often thought of the many people I know who say, I'm going to go into a business and I'm going to open a restaurant. And I said to myself, some real estate person is going to get a nice deal here. Mm-hmm. Because the person's going to open a restaurant and the real estate agent knows the restaurant's not going to work. So they work the deal that way so that they can get their money on the back end. And they live off the unsuccessful stories.
Mm-hmm.
And many people live off the unsuccessful attempts by other people. So
I think it's true. Most businesses that get started fail. I mean, it's only about 1 out of 4 businesses that succeed after 5 years. The problem is undercapitalization and lack of a clear plan and lack of skills and the lack of willingness to hire the people you need and to get the education you need to make it a success. And so, yeah, there are a lot of people that will take advantage of other people. I think, you know, really good, successful people will hire coaches who have already been successful in that arena, whether it's opening a restaurant or starting a seminar company or, you know, becoming a professional athlete. We all need to have a coach who's been there, but so many of us suffer from this fear of, I don't want to look like I need anything from anybody, that we don't reach out.
But so many people, Jack, you know, and the basis of your work is the power of focus. So many people I know who are creative are virtually, they look like they have attention deficit disorder. They couldn't sit still long enough to focus on anything. So then are you saying that they can't be successful? Because there are so many people who, you know, the people you sell the organizers to, you know, they get these desk organizers because they actually think it's going to help them organize the desk. But there are people who cannot focus their attention because their mind is moving too fast. Are we saying that without the ability to focus, a person's doomed to failure?
You know, I'm not saying everybody that can't focus is doomed to failure. I always say if you're going to raise a child, you have to have two parents. The creative side is the feminine side that brings in the creative aspect, but the masculine side is the part that brings it out to the world. I have a friend who's an artist, and he spends half of his time painting and half of his time taking courses in how to be a successful artist, how to deal with museums, how to deal with dealers, how to get your first art show. He reads these things. And if you only paint and you don't sell, you're gonna die. And you and I have all been down streets where we've seen these little art galleries that are run by one person, and invariably he's selling hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of art a day, and yet there are other artists that are probably better, but they're not selling their art because they don't have the business side down. And that's where you either have to partner up with someone who has the skills that you don't, or you have to develop those skills for yourself.
How does one develop the skill of focus when they don't have the skill of focus, when they're unable to? How do you develop that?
I think primarily it's two kinds of processes. One is developing one's ability to think, and the other is developing one's ability to hold one's attention on a topic. And I would say probably for me, in my work with clients over the last 20 years, because I've been a therapist and then a workshop leader as well as an author, is the practice of meditation. And there are other techniques where you can develop your will. For instance, you can stand on a chair for 20 minutes with absolutely no purpose other than learning to stand there and not go crazy. So there are different techniques that people can develop to develop willpower, to develop their focus, and to develop how to focus.
Are these covered in The Power of Focus, or are we assuming that you've got you've got it beforehand? Are these covered in that book?
We talk about the idea of how to focus your behavior and how to focus your...
So, but let's talk for a moment just about the ability to stand on a chair.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about that. I mean, how did that come up as an idea? The idea
I actually learned that from a trainer I had 30 years ago in a field called psychosynthesis, and there's a wonderful...
Oh, my gosh. Is that the Pesos?
Yes. Not Peso. It was Alex... I'm spacing his name right now. He's an Italian. Roberto Assagioli.
Right, Assagioli, sure.
And Assagioli basically wrote a wonderful book called The Act of Will. And he said, you know, it's not okay to just have ideas and be creative if you can't birth them in a way that they come out into the world and become reality. And so one of the ways to develop your will is to do what he calls meaningless acts of focus, so that you develop the ability to hold your attention. Now, I still think meditation on a one focus, like a mantra or an idea where you sit and focus on a candle flame, or you repeat a mantra like Om Namo Shivaya, or, you know, anything. The guy up at Harvard who wrote the relaxation response, Dr. Herbert Benson, found that if people just closed their eyes and meditated on the word hamburger, they would get the same reaction.
Wait a minute. How do you close your eyes and meditate on the word hamburger?
You just say the word hamburger over and over. Hamburger, hamburger, hamburger. And when your focus fades away, you start thinking about, gee, did I turn the lights off, what I'm eating tonight? You go back to hamburger. And it's a matter of, like, I always use the metaphor, you're standing on the side of a river, and you're watching boats go down the river. And those are your ideas. And you don't want to get on any boat. You just want to watch them go by. Because our tendency is we are so distracted. We're pulled off by every thought, by every fear, by every sensation. And we can't come back to the center. So we're practicing coming back to what we're focusing on. And it can be an image or it can be a sound.
We're talking with Jack Canfield, who with Mark Victor Hansen and Les Ewitt wrote a book called The Power of Focus. Jack has helped a number of people get themselves going and towards their way of success. Jack, let me ask you this now. So we're talking about some of the ways that people could develop focus, and I can tell you this is so much more important than anyone imagines. For those who don't have the focus other than meditation, because many people try meditation and it just scares them, it spooks them. Other than meditation, you say, you know, and other than using the word hamburger, what other techniques are there that will help you develop your ability of your mind to focus? We're going to start with that, and then we'll talk about the rest of how you put that into play.
Well, I want to go back to what you said about people get spooked by meditation. Meditation is a very simple process. And if anyone's spooked by meditation, what they need to do is confront what is getting spooked. Meditation is no different than sitting and just focusing your mind. You can do a contemplative meditation where you sit and ask yourself a question over and over. What's the one thing I need to focus on to improve my life? Or what's the one thing I need to focus on to develop more focus? I mean, you can. There's nothing scary about that. It's not an Eastern religion. It's
one of the things
focusing your mind.
One of the things I think that bothers people the most, as I've seen it, is that when they clear their mind, they see meditation as clearing their mind. And when they clear their mind, a lot of the emotions that they haven't confronted from the past tend to come up. So a lot of feelings that have been denied tend to surface when you get quiet. Now, if you're somebody who's compulsively active, then you keep your mind very busy all the time so that you don't feel things.
Right. Well,
so then what happens when they get quiet is they start to feel these things. So we could easily say, oh, go ahead, everybody, face your feelings. That's an enormous job.
Well,
for the people who...
an enormous job, but if someone sitting over here is a success coach, I will tell you that if you don't face your feelings, your chances of being an outrageous success are very small, because you're carrying, it's like driving with the emergency brake on. It's like driving your boat with the anchor driving behind. If people do not clear their negative past, their chances of being highly, highly successful are very small. And so I think those fears are one of the things that stop us, and I think people need to learn to face those fears, which is part of the focusing process. Now, I wouldn't necessarily suggest them doing it alone. I think, you know, under the supervision of a therapist or a very good meditation teacher.
Well, I from what you and I would call success, we would be talking at a kind of personal success, which includes a business success plus feeling good about what you're doing. But if you look out there in the world at the people who have the very most success, you could tell they never cleared their emotions at all.
Yeah, but they're not enjoying their success.
So then we're taking a different description of what success is.
Yes, and I also believe that, you know, yes, you'll find people out there who are very driven, who are very successful. But also, my belief is, when I say ultra-success, I'm talking about the people that reach the level of a Steven Spielberg or the people that reach a level of a Bill Gates. There's something inside of them where they are totally in touch with a passionate purpose. And my experience is a lot of people are successful financially, but they're not successful in terms of having passion, in terms of having relationships at work, in terms of having people that like them, in terms of enjoying their work. And without those things, success is simply hollow.
So what is success? Let's put that. What is success is your description? Because I agree with you. You know, I know a lot of successes out there who are successes because they're avoiding things like their own feelings or their relationship with their husbands or wives. So they go out there and they became workaholics, and yes, they become successful. But, you know, they fall over and drop dead from a heart attack at some point, but they were very successful. So what is success to Jack Canfield?
Well, success to me is living my highest purpose. And so my vision statement for myself or my purpose statement is inspiring and empowering people to live their highest vision in the context of love and joy. So when I'm doing that, I am successful. I'm living my purpose. I'm fulfilled. And now what I find is, if you go back to the old book, you know, do what you love, the money will follow. When I'm on purpose, I always have enough resources to do what I want to do and to be happy.
But you didn't include in that your personal life.
My personal life is in there, in a context of love and joy. So if I'm not experiencing love and joy, even though I'm reaching my highest vision, and this goes back to what you said earlier, if people are successful financially but they're not happy and they're numbing out with drugs, alcohol, sex, and work and television, etc., then the love and joy factor is not there. If you're just happy but you're not living your purpose of expressing who you really are, you know, and living your vision of what you're doing, if you're just numbing out again, and you can be happy, like you can drink and be happy, it doesn't last very long. Then again, you're not fulfilled. So to be fulfilled, I believe, is to be filled full of your purpose being expressed in life. And everybody's purpose is different. Mine has to do with a huge outreach to lots of people through books and stories and seminars.
And you've certainly done that successfully.
What?
You've certainly done that successfully.
Thank you.
Jeez, I mean, you're all over the place.
Yeah, I'm married to a woman whose purpose has to do with supporting others. You know, she volunteers at her meditation center. She supports me in the work I do. She supports our children in growing up. And that's totally fulfilling for her. She has no aspirations beyond that.
Well, Jack, as I was listening to you, I was thinking about two questions. One is, when you say people should go get their coach, you know, that people often don't ask for help. There are a lot of people who might not think they could afford a coach or, you know, have issues about that. Where do you go with that?
Well, I tell people that there's all kinds of coaching available, either at very low cost or free. There are a number of people who will mentor people for free. In the small business world, there are retired small business people who are bored out of their nut, and they basically want to help other people that are in business.
And when you say mentor, can you just describe that a little
bit? Well, a mentor is somebody who's already done what you want to do. In our book, The Power of Focus, we talk about a guy who started a trucking company up in Canada, and he had no money whatsoever. I mean, he was really strapped. He borrowed everything he could to get going. But there was a guy down in Texas who had a trucking company who he knew was the best trucking company in the world. And because of a seminar he took with us, he ended up calling this guy in Texas and saying, look, I'd like to have 10 minutes of time with you once a month just to ask you a few questions because you've been where I want to go. Would you grant me 10 minutes? I won't take any more of your time. The guy said yes. A few months later, he said, you know, you really obviously need to know a lot. Why don't you come down and spend a couple of days just hanging out with me and being a fly on the wall? And so basically, if you start with a small request, somebody out there will want to help you. But you've got to ask. And a lot of times, the first person will say no.
It does sound like there. You know, you take certain steps, and as you know, you say you have to ask. How have you found that many people say that's what they can't get to? You know, they don't know how to get to that first step of actually going ahead and asking. What do you suggest then?
Then I suggest they practice and start with something small and easy, like asking for a hug from your husband, or asking your parent to take you out to lunch, or, you know, something. You know, you start small and build up. But one of the things we found is one of the greatest obstacles to people's happiness, both in business and personal life, is the unwillingness. And it's not an inability. Everybody has the ability to ask, because it's simply opening your mouth and saying words, which, unless you're dumb, everybody can do. By dumb, I mean unable to speak. And so the reality is you can start small in a safe place with people you trust and practice asking, and then start asking where it's a little riskier. I always tell people the worst that can happen is that someone will say no.
Right.
And you already have a no, so it can't get worse.
of course, people, when they hear the word success, don't think of little. You know, that when you describe getting success or really getting to your greater purpose, it often sounds like much larger. So how do you make sure that people are feeling okay about just going small when they really have these sort of greater plans in sight?
Well, you have to start where you are. And it sort of would be nice to go and become a millionaire overnight or have the best relationship on the planet overnight. I mean, I'm a best-selling author, but I wrote 7 books before my first book became a bestseller. And I had to learn the craft of writing. I had to learn how to, you know, we were rejected by 144 publishers in New York City and in San Francisco as well until we finally got a publisher. So we had to do a lot of asking. But what we always say is when someone says no, you say next. It's like, see, people believe there's this thing called rejection. And I claim that rejection is simply a myth. That if I apply to go to Harvard and don't get in, I wasn't in Harvard before I applied, I'm not in Harvard after I applied. And I've spent my whole life not going to Harvard, so I can handle that. So if you ask someone for a date and they say no, big deal. You didn't have a date before you asked, you don't have a date now. If you ask someone to mentor you and they say no, so what? So I tell people, you've got to build in exercises that take you out there. Like, think of something you can ask for, and then go out and ask. And just even if it's something simple, like ask. What I used to teach people in therapy was to go and ask directions for a place that, you know, is easy to find. And then people just, you'd be surprised. People go, oh, okay, it's just down there. I used to teach people to go into 7-Eleven stores and ask where the 7-Eleven was, just to get over the fear of looking foolish.
Well, I know.
And invariably, they'd say, well, sir, you are in the 7-Eleven store. No one laughed at them. No one put them down.
I know that you taught me well because I did ask you to be on the show, and look what happened.
The idea of practicing your request becomes one of the skills. Practicing to receive a yes, you know, I mean, people ask for things all the time.
Uh-huh.
And they ask to get things all the time, and they don't even recognize that they're asking. But there is something about asking someone who you perceive is superior in some way, somebody who is successful. It's something about having a certain shame in asking. I very often find that when people are traveling and they're trying to speak a language in another country, they speak in a way almost like it's childlike. They're almost apologizing for their use of the language.
Mm-hmm.
And what they get in response from people is kind of a critical response. Whereas because it's almost as if they don't have the right not to speak the language. And they feel embarrassed by it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're saying something very important. And we're talking to Jack Canfield in case you just tuned in. You're saying that go out there and practice asking. Practice asking people. Just hear the word yes come in your ears. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, if you say, would you like a dollar? I wonder how many people would take it. You know, do something that would be a guaranteed yes. I remember one Thanksgiving, Rachel, I never told you, it was Thanksgiving, and if it's appropriate, it was Thanksgiving, and I had rented a car, but the only car that Hertz had for me was a bus. They didn't have a car. They only had a bus. They said, we have no cars left. We're sorry. We do have that bus. So I took the bus out to Long Island where I was going. On the way back, here I am with a bus. I mean, I'm not talking about a little bus. I'm talking about a medium-sized bus. And I'm coming across, and it started snowing. And I pull up at a bus stop, and there are people freezing, thinking that I'm a real bus. So I tell them, I open the door and say, hey, you want to go across town? And they say, oh, you're not a real bus. I said, no, I'm not a real bus. And they wouldn't get on the bus. So I went to the next stop as an experiment. And I said, would you like a bus ride? 75 cents. And they said, okay. And they got on as long as they would pay the 75 cents. And I kept doing this back and forth across town, eventually giving the people their money back. But they wouldn't get on unless they thought they had to pay for it.
No, it's true that, you know, you go back to like saying, would you like to take a dollar? There's been research done where they've put people out on the street trying to give away dollar bills in New York City. Most people won't take them because they're afraid there's some kind of hitch. They're so unused to being offered something for free that they don't trust it when it comes.
So what causes otherwise intelligent people to lose their focus? You know, I mean, people who are intelligent enough to have the focus, to put it into force, Jack, what causes these otherwise relatively, you know, smart people to lose their focus?
Well, I think there are a number of things. You know, low self-esteem can be one. We're spending so much time protecting ourselves psychologically that we're unable to focus on the things going on outside of us. I think sometimes when we're in deep psychological pain, as many New Yorkers have been, you know, since September 11th, we have a higher priority, which is our own recreation, our own healing process. So it makes it difficult to focus on that which is outside. I mean, you know, when you're really sick, you don't even want the windows open or the TV on. You're just kind of cocooning inside. And sometimes that's important. We need to focus on that, but we think we have to force ourselves to focus on other things. I think, you know, people are just pulled off by the demands of life. I mean, I've got 3 children at home, 2 children out in the world, a wife, 12 staff people, 28 co-authors of books I've written and we're trying to market and sell, and 30 co-authors of books that we're working on now for the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. And I have things coming at me constantly. And so I've got to constantly, every day, prioritize what's most important and then push away everything else. And that's difficult for people because people want to be nice. They want to be seen as a good guy. And you have, if your self-esteem's high and someone asks you for something and you say no, if the fear is, you know, if you're low self-esteem, you're afraid you won't be liked. But if you have high self-esteem, you know, hey, I know what I'm doing. This is important. These are my priorities, and I have to learn to say no. And if people don't like it, too bad.
So what you've got to do, if you find yourself losing focus, what's your step? I mean, low self-esteem.
I would say make a list of those things that are important, and then make a list of priorities, 1 through 7, 10, 20, whatever it is. Pick the first one and focus on that until you get that thing done.
Give me an example of that.
What?
Let me have an example of that.
Let's say that you're over. I go back to my wife. We got. I'm married now, just recently, second marriage, to a woman who is very spontaneous, very artistic, and very in the moment. And when we were planning our wedding, she was so overwhelmed, she didn't know what to do. And so I had my personal assistant from my office come and sit down with her. And they made a list of everything that had to happen between now and the wedding. And then they went, well, what would have to happen first? What would have to happen second? What would have to happen third? And so forth. And then she said, now I want you to put a date on this by when you'll do it. Do you need any help? Now let's focus on that first thing. And then she put everything else to the side and only worked on that one thing. Instead of having 70 things in front of her, she couldn't pick. People often say confusion is having a lot of things, options in front of you, and none of them become a priority, so that everywhere you look, there's something to do, and you don't do any of them. People become overwhelmed. So basically, it's prioritizing, and then picking, and then forcing yourself to do the thing you have to do first.
My guest, Jack Canfield, who, with co-authors Mark Victor Hansen and Les Hewitt, wrote a book called The Power of Focus. There are good habits and there are bad habits when you're working to develop a goal, mm-hmm. right? Let's say the first thing that a person has got to do is, you say, prioritize your goal. What's your first step?
Basically, decide what's most important to you. For me, it's first, it's my spiritual life. Second, it's my health. Third, it's my family. And fourth, it's my mission on Earth in terms of my work. And so if I get up and I've only got an hour and I haven't exercised, I know what my first priority is. It's going to be meditation and exercise, because spirituality and health are my two priorities. So once you're clear about what's most important to you and what your objectives are in terms of goals, you know, like I've got a goal to sell 1 billion books by the year 2020. Now, nobody's ever done that in the history of the world. But we decided to set that as a goal and call it our 2020 vision, because we want to affect people and make their lives work better. So it forces us to play at a much higher level. But since I know I have that goal, it's my number one business goal, that's every day I'm focused on that. I have to do something. We teach something called the Law of Five, which says every day do 5 things. It can be little tiny things, you know, write a letter, answer your mail, whatever. But 5 things that will get you closer toward your major objective in life. So I do an interview every day, like I'm doing with you. I send out free books to people that could review them and could write about them. I go online and leave messages in chat rooms. I write reviews at Amazon.com. So I'm constantly doing 5 things a day. You can't spend your whole life on your business goals, or you'll suffer in the family life and the health life and so forth. But I always say, if you were to do 5 things every day, at the end of the year, you've done 1,500 specific actions that will take you closer to your goal.
We're going to take a short break, my friends, and when we come back, more with Jack Canfield and Rachel Hart.
Hi, this is Julian Joiello, and I'm a listener and supporter of WBAI. I'm 20 years old, and I'm a student at NYU, and I live in New York City. And I want to shout out to the other young listeners of WBAI. We have to help keep the station going, and the easiest way to do it is through the WBAI Buddy System. If you donate as little as $10 a month, you have proactively promoted free speech radio. Go to the website, wbai.org, click the donate button, and make a difference.
This is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind. You're listening to an interview with Jack Canfield. All right, well, let's go back to the beginning here. You determine your priorities. You try to say what is important to me, and you said, well, there's my spiritual life, there's my physical health. Let's say that somebody looks at it and they say, my highest priority is having a good, loving relationship. Okay. But since I can't find a good, loving relationship, I'd like to have a good business. But the highest priority is a good, loving relationship.
And I'd say you haven't looked long enough, hard enough, worked on yourself, learned how to date, whatever it is. If that's your highest goal, do not give up on it just because you haven't achieved it yet. Don't sublimate it into a business.
So if that is my highest goal, then what do I do about, you know, in the meantime, I'm working on that. So now I want to be successful. Do I keep my highest goal in mind and then go for my second goal?
Yes, basically we all compartmentalize our life into sections of the day. And so it's fine to go to work and work on your business goals. But when you're off work, work on the other goals. You know, read, go to seminars, get therapy, do training, work out, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, I spend time on numerous goals. I mean, I have 52 goals that I want to achieve this year that all relate to my personal life, my spiritual life. I mean, I have goals for how many hours I'll meditate, how many books I'll read. I have goals for how many clients we'll have in our speaking business. So, you know, each section of my life, whether it's body, emotional, social, spiritual, community service, business, that kind of covers most everything for most people. Financial would be another one, perhaps. Decide what I want in each of those areas, and then figure out a plan.
You know, but, Jack, it gets so screwy because, you know, most people, if you ask them what is their goal, they're going to say to have enough money. I'm going to give you my story about Ido. Ido was a guy who came from Israel, and he came to me work in my clinic. And I said, Ido, what are you doing here? He said, I just came in from Israel. He said, I'm willing to do anything. Wash windows, clean floors. He said, give me $10 an hour. And I said, and what are you looking to save your money for? He said, I want to buy a little boat and float around the Mediterranean. He said, that's all I want. All I need is enough money. So about 2 years later, I saw Ido again in New York, surprised because he only stayed with me a little while. And I said, Ido, what are you still doing here? And he said, I need a bigger boat. Now this is what I find happens to people.
There is that problem, and that's what I talk about, the law of distraction, is we become distracted by that thing which is not all that important. Now, maybe he did need a bigger boat and really needed that to go around the Mediterranean, but more than likely what you're referring to is the phenomenon that if you ask anybody how much money they need to be comfortable, it's always more than they have. So if you ask a guy making $300,000 a year, it's $500,000. Ask a guy making $1 million a year, it's $2 million. Ask a guy making $50,000, it's $100,000. So there is this built-in kind of thing into our system that we always want more. But part of what I teach in my seminars is you have to really get clear how much is enough. And it's a thinking process. Most people do not think. Most people are responsive. We respond to ads. We respond to requests. We respond to other people. We respond to what we see on TV. But we don't take time to shut off all the distractions and simply think. Like some people say, I want to be financially independent. And I say, well, how much money is that? And they go, I don't know. I say, well, what does it mean, financially independent? So I'd like to have a boat. Well, let's find out what a boat costs. What does it cost to dock it in a slip? What does it cost to travel twice a year for vacations? What else do you want? You know, and then be clear. And if that's a financial goal they have, they can sit down with a financial planner and figure out how to get that.
But how often does somebody's financial plan really cover up? You know, I mean, sometimes people want to have power. And you say, okay, what's your goal? I want to have enough power so I never have to listen to anybody else again. And you see a clear neurosis. You see that they've got some real issues with their fathers, that if they could learn how to take a job and work with a job, they'd be so much better off. They've got a goal they're never going to achieve. Yet if they go to a seminar with Jack Canfield, they're just going to take this goal, I'm going to have enough power so I don't ever have to listen to anybody.
No, and that's not going to happen, because if they come to a seminar with me, what they're going to do is get in touch with, underneath all of that, what is their true life purpose. And then underneath that, we're going to get in touch with what are the emotional blocks that are stopping them from moving forward to that. And that's where they're going to uncover the exact stuff you're talking about and get back in touch with only having goals that manifest their life purpose, that come out of their true need and not out of the greed and the power needs that cover up fear, which is what you're referring to.
So how do people identify that? We've got a couple of hundred thousand people who are listening to this show who are saying right now, what is my greatest goal? And 90% of them are going to pick something that keeps them out of whatever their primary pain is.
Well, if I could do that over the radio, I'd have my own show, and I'd be making lots of money on it.
Uh-huh.
The reality is the problem here, and this is the problem with all media, is that, you know, the kind of work we're talking about is deep work that takes place over time. And that can only be done in a context of therapy or meditation or a spiritual path, in a group setting perhaps. And it can't be done just by reading a book or listening to a radio show.
But I think I must say, and I'm not one to really tell people that I think books will make a difference. From what Rachel has shown me and from what I've seen, your book is so specific in helping people that I think it really is very helpful in helping people identify and see the kind of traps that they could fall into. I mean, just this one idea of the bad habits and the good habits. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. What are let's start with the good habits of successful people.
Well, my experience is that the successful habits that people have is that they keep their agreements. They read an hour a day. See, when I started with W. Clement Stone, who was my success mentor, who was worth $600 million when I worked for him, and basically I was learning the business side of success, he said, Jack, I want you to give up an hour of TV a day and read an hour a day. In 10 years, you'll have read 520 books. It'll put you in the top 1% of your field. Taking time to exercise, drinking enough water. I mean, imagine, you know, there's a book out, a wonderful book called You're Dying of Thirst. And about 90% of Americans are underhydrated. We don't drink water except at breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We need 8 to 10 glasses a day. So there are tons of habits, habits of relaxing your body, habits of getting enough recreation, habits of strategic planning, the kind of stuff we've been talking about, thinking, you know, the way you control your diet, getting a massage every week, some kind of, you know, stress reduction. I mean, there's so many habits that are so critical to people. And the funny thing is, it's not like they need to listen to this radio show to find out what those habits are. Everyone knows what they should be doing. It's not like it's a big secret. The problem is people will not take responsibility for their lives and structure their lives in such a way that they make time for the things they know how to do.
So right now, people could ask themselves a question, what are my 10 best things I do for myself, right, that are my best good habits? What are the best 10 habits I could develop that I know are good for me? And practically everybody will have that answer.
Yes, and you could ask people, what are the 10 things that make you happiest?
That's the simple thing. What are the 10? Right, and a lot of people will say, well, good drugs. A lot of alcohol.
Well, see, I don't believe that good drugs and alcohol make you happy.
So now we're going to tell them what happiness is.
They numb out the pain, but they don't, they remove the pain, they remove the awareness of the pain, but they don't really get rid of the pain. And that's why, I'm not saying, you know, once in a while have a great party and get a little high. But what I'm saying is, people that are doing that on a daily basis or 5 times a week, they're numbing out. They're not getting happy.
But a lot of people would pick goals. They would say, what is good for me? They would pick things that make them numb out. Well, what's good for me? What do I enjoy? What makes me happy? Sitting in front of a TV when I go home at night and seeing a good movie. Now, that's one of the things that numb you out, yet people would pick it as one of the things that make them happy.
Well, I'm not sure that seeing a movie every once in a while is a problem.
No, but I mean every night.
If it's every night and they're watching from the time they open the door to the time they turn off, you know, they go to bed, that's that six-hour thing I was talking about, 5 o'clock to 11 at night. Most people, though, I don't know, I tend to have a more optimistic experience of people than you do. Maybe it's living on the West Coast.
It's the West Coast versus the East Coast.
My experience, if I ask people what are the things that make you happy, I hear things like walking on the beach, playing with my dog, going skiing, opening my mail, playing with my children, getting a massage, eating a good meal. And so most of those things don't cost a lot of money. And there's just a matter of building in time so you can do those things. I've had people come to workshops and write me a letter 2 weeks later saying, you know, I'm not doing the dishes every night like I used to. In fact, now I'm walking across the street and playing in the park with my children. So that maybe the clean house wasn't the most important thing, but spending time, quality time with my kids is. And as people begin to lean into those things that truly make them happy and find a place for them every day without feeling guilty. See, I teach people in my seminars a phrase called, my needs are just as important as your needs. And so many times we think that other people's needs are more important than our needs, thus we become codependent. So we're taking care of our elderly parents, we're taking care of our children, we're taking care of our husband or our wife, our neighbors, our church, the committees at school. And we have to learn to say no to some of those things and say yes to the things that truly make us happy, that make us feel good in our body as well as our feelings and as well as what we think about what we should do.
You know, Jack, one of the areas that I was thinking about with good habits was about how you described what to do with money, because I know that a lot of my clients, that they do bring up issues about money, and I'd like to ask you to just describe what are some of the good habits about money.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things is people need to learn to save some portion of whatever they make. It's critical. Most people don't do that. Most of us are on credit cards and we're overextended. And, you know, it's one of the neat things about compound interest is that if you put away money every year, starting when you're 20, even if it's $10 a week, and everyone who says, I can't afford $10 a week, I challenge that. I bet you're spending $10 on coffee at Starbucks. I bet you're drinking the big 12-ounce colas that cost $1.89 at your gas station. There's always a way to cut back. If you're smoking cigarettes, I mean, you're throwing your financial future down the drain with the amount of money you could be saving if you just were putting that into a savings account, eventually maybe into a money market account, a mutual fund. So saving is critical. I think tithing, some form of giving away some portion of what you earn. Number one, it makes you feel abundant. And number two, I really believe it does come back multiplied. One of the techniques that W. Clement Stone taught me was to always carry a $100 bill in my pocket. And there were times when that was a real challenge. But if you always have a $100 bill in your pocket, whenever you go to pay a bill, you always go, oh, I'm not broke. I have $100. Makes you feel rich. So there's a number of things you can do. And I think clearly one has to get a financial planner, decide where you want to be 10, 15 years, 20, 30 years from now, and decide what will I have to do to get there. Most people don't have a plan. The average American retires with less than $25,000 net worth. That's insane. They'll have a million. If you make $25,000 a year, you'll have $1 million go through your hands in 40 years. You'd think you could have hung on to some of that.
My guest is Jack Canfield, and the book is The Power of Focus, a new book that just came out. Jack, those are the good habits. You have the bad habits. People do things that they do. I've seen so many people get near success. I have a dear friend who finally got herself out of debt, paid off, rescheduled her mortgage, did everything, and was finally flowing with money and suddenly felt the impulse to quit everything. And I've seen that happen with a lot of people. They suddenly decide to stop when they're at the peak of their game. Have you seen that happen a lot?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have a guilt thing that's associated with success, and there's millions of causes for it. Sometimes it's just comparing themselves to the poor people of the world. Sometimes it's, I'm not allowed to be more successful than my father was. He won't love me. You know, on it goes. That's, again, why I think good therapy, good meditation gets to the underlying causes of those things. But I always tell people, if you want to identify what your bad habits are, it's really simple. Ask the people at home and the people at work to make a list of what they consider to be your bad habits. And they will tell you. Gladly, they'll tell you. And just take all those lists and combine them, and you'll see exactly where your habits are. You know, not returning phone calls on time, being late, handling the mail more than once, not following up consistently on receivables if you're a business, not pressing people to pay you if you're in a business, eating fast food meals Monday through Friday because it's convenient instead of healthy food. I know people that have their cell phone on all the time. I mean, I have a friend who's a massage therapist who tells me one of her patients half the time is talking on the cell phone while he's getting a massage. So, I mean, there's 100 bad habits one could have. The key is to do an inventory. And my staff, I have my staff give each other feedback once every 3 months called How I See You Limiting Yourself. So we have a person on the hot seat. The other 8 people in the company say for a couple minutes, here's how I see you limiting yourself. And out of that, we identify what the limiting behaviors are, and then we create a program that says, where will I be 50 years from now if I keep this up? What would I have to do that was different? Where would that take me 50 years from now? So now I have a positive vision of where I want to go and this negative thing. So I go away from the negative image toward the positive image, and we keep breaking the bad habits. We say you should be eliminating one bad habit and replacing it with a positive habit every 3 months. That's 4 new habits a year, 10 years, 40 new habits. That's enough to take anyone from unsuccess.
Let's just slow that one down and say it again. Eliminating one bad habit every 3 months.
And replacing it with a good habit.
Replacing it with a good habit, so...
It takes about 3 months to get rid of a bad habit. It takes 3 months to get rid, you know, to new one. Like, I mean, how many people have started flossing their teeth after they come back from the dentist, just having their teeth clean? But if you don't keep that up for 3 months, it will disappear and not become a real habit. And if you try to change too many habits all at once, you're overwhelmed. You can't do it. So it might be just putting things back where you got them from. That's your habit. Asking people for help. That's the new habit. Might be flossing your teeth, drinking 10 glasses of water every day, taking a half-hour walk at lunch instead of eating a big fat meal. You know, I mean, there's a ton of habits one can build in. And if you have 4 a year, in 20 years, you'll have 80 new habits, and you'll have gotten rid of 80 bad habits.
Well, I think there's something very special in what you're saying, because very often we think of getting rid of bad habits and it leaves a vacuum. Whereas if you're getting rid of a bad habit and you're developing a good habit, for example, overeating, if you say to yourself, I'm not going to eat that fast food at lunch, and I'm going to take a walk for 10 minutes, you see, you're getting something on the other side of it, which I think is important.
Right.
So I think there is something about developing a positive while you're eliminating a negative. You're not just stripping yourself of something,
yes,
but you're
mind,
replacing it with something.
The mind cannot stand just to get rid of something. It abhors a vacuum. So if you say, I'm not going to eat fast food, you better also say, what am I going to eat? And how am I going to make sure I have that food available? Eating well in our culture takes a little more time than eating badly. And so how am I going to do, what's that going to look like? How am I going to make that happen?
How about overspending or being late as two of the things that help people, you know, really get people to defeat themselves?
Right. I think one of the ways to avoid overspending is to really put yourself on a budget and then keep a log of everything you spend. Most people are unconscious when they spend. If you had to write down every purchase, including the 50-cent newspaper you pick up on the way to work, and you start seeing what you're doing and being aware of it. The other thing is to pay cash for everything. That really slows you. Very easy to run up a $442 clothing bill at Barney's and walk out the door by signing your name. But when you got to shell over four $100 bills, that is a real different experience. So that's another way to...
So for people who tend to overspend, it is really important to get away from this plastic way of doing it.
Exactly.
Because what happens to people, and I've seen this happen often enough, they are planning to their next paycheck. And one of the ways, one of the strategies that I've learned is plan from your last paycheck, not from your next paycheck.
Exactly.
Spend the money you already have. Don't spend the money you're yet to have. Because
yes. And I mean, there are certain things like buying a car, you know, certain piece of furniture, refrigerator, et cetera, that probably should be bought over time so that you can amortize that out and, you know, have the things you need, especially when you're starting out young. But basically, other purchases, food, groceries, et cetera, boy, you spend cash that you have, it really makes a difference instead of, like you said, spending plastic, which you don't have.
You know, Jack, one of the areas about money is that sometimes it's not just about you and money. It's about you, money, and somebody else.
Yes.
And one of the bad habits you listed was toxic relationships. Can you explain how that's a habit?
Well, a lot of people will end up being attracted to the same kind of people they grew up with as parents. And if your parents were controlling, or if your parents ignored you, if your parents were abusive, whatever, we tend to seek that out in the adult relationships we have. But so basically those become toxic relationships. And I always say, you know, do you feel uplifted by or do you feel put down by and contracted by, you know, when you're with other people? And, you know, I certainly have my share of toxic relationships in life. I can speak from experience. And, you know, I know now that I'm in a very positive, loving relationship. It's phenomenal. And I think that people... What I tell people to do is make a list of everyone you interact with and then put a T next to everyone who's toxic and an N next to everyone who's nurturing, positive, and uplifting. And stop hanging out with the toxic people. And when it comes to, like, being in a relationship with someone and you're fighting about money, then what you have to do, again, is get clear. Clarity is power. You know, so we found that the number one thing of successful people was they were clear. They were clear with their vision, philosophy, purpose, goals, relational, you know,
clear meaning that they knew what they were doing, or what exactly
clear meaning they come to an agreement. Like, you know, we don't make purchases over $200 without having a negotiation. You know, we have this in the budget. This is what you're allowed to spend without anyone telling you what you can and can't do. This is what I'm allowed to spend. Beyond that, we have to negotiate. You can't just run out and go to Costco and on an impulse buy a $4,000, you know, big screen TV because there's a Super Bowl coming. That's a family decision. So that everyone's clear what the rules are.
So there
some
are
people
some
people are afraid to negotiate those rules because they don't want to have conflict.
So there are some people who are toxic that you could clearly say, okay, I can't be around them. Then there are family members. You know, how do you deal with people who you might say, well, they're not really good for me, but they're family?
Well, I always say you don't have to go home for Christmas. That's a myth. You know, if you have a toxic relationship with your sister, and you've worked at trying to make it work and it doesn't, you don't have to hang out with your sister just because she's blood. I mean, if she's willing and you're willing to work on it, then great. But if not, you know, why go there? Now, some people are very, very centered in themselves and their love and their compassion, like Mother Teresa. You know, she can be with anybody, including, you know, Saddam Hussein, and stay in her heart and not let the other person affect them. But if you're feeling miserable after 3 hours with your sister, stop interacting with her. That's like walking by a machine that hits you every time, and you keep walking down the same street in front of the same machine. Stop.
Okay. So I understand there's a lot about really saying stop as you know, as well as saying no. You know, being able to say this is no. I think actually you had a great no exceptions policy.
There are certain things that you have to have a no. When you start a new habit, let's say you're not going to eat fast food, you have to have a no exceptions policy, which basically says, no fast food. So someone says, come on, let's just go to McDonald's today. You go, no, I don't eat fast food. Oh, come on, let's go. No, I don't eat fast food. It's just like saying, no, I don't take heroin, or no, I don't drink, or no, I don't cheat on my taxes. And to make a habit lock in, if you get in bed and you realize you haven't flossed your teeth, it's called get out of bed, go floss your teeth. It's simply no exceptions. And if you do that, again, as I said, for 3 months, what will happen is you will get the new habit. One of the principles I teach in my seminars is E plus R equals O. It says there are events in life, there's your response to that event, and that gives you an outcome. If you don't like your outcomes, change your responses. If you don't like being fat, stop eating so much, exercise more. I always say, you know, do what the thin people do. You know, take what they take on their plate, exercise when they exercise. If you don't like where you are money-wise, you've got to change your money habits. You don't like where you are in business, you've got to do something different. You can't keep doing what you've been doing and get a different result, because if you would, that result would have already showed up.
Well, I definitely know that those are the wise steps. It's not always so easy to do all of those steps, though.
Well, it's simple, but it's not easy.
Okay.
Well, our guest has been Jack Canfield, author of The Power of Focus. The wonderful thing about learning, a wonderful thing about listening, one of the advantages I had as a youth was learning to listen. You listen without judgment. You listen without criticism. Listen to what someone has to say and take it in yourself. Run it through your system. One of the beautiful tools we have is WBAI, the radio station. If you want to hear today's program, by the way, you can go to WBAI.org, and you could also go there and see what you could do to contribute to this place that provides you with such an education. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. You can also listen to a lot of our archives, other programs that we've done, filled with information, things worth listening to, like last week's program with Marilyn Ferguson. You can go to thepositivemind.com and send me an email. Let me know your response to what you hear when you hear these kind of thoughts. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friend. Special thanks to Rachel Hott, Jack Canfield. Bye-bye for now.
Live if you want to live. Rasta man, vibration, yeah.
Positive.
That's what we got to give. I and I, vibration, yeah.
Positive.
Got to have a good vibe.
If you know what I mean. a new day.
Picking up. Are you picking up now?
Jah love, Jah love.
Protect us.
Jah love, Jah love.
Protect us.
Jah love, Jah love.
Rastaman vibration, yeah,
positive.
I and I vibration, yeah,
positive.
Yeah. I am man vibration, yeah,
Irish.
Whoa, positive.
Are you kidding?